if people are trying to hold a standard that's too high, let's say they're trying to hold their airspeed perfectly in route, they're probably not focusing their attention. Their cross check isn't on the right things because they're putting too much emphasis on something that doesn't need to be exactly perfect. It just needs to be close. And that way it releases your brain to focus on things that it needs to focus on. But the other thing it brings up, and this is interestingly enough, applies to entrepreneurs as well. I mean, not just entrepreneurs. We have this idea that it can't be easy. So you were talking about how easy a steep turn could be. Your student sometimes probably thinks, well, that can't work for me. It's got to be hard for me because I'm new and it can't be as easy as it is for him. And granted, there's going to be a learning curve, but if somebody literally just did exactly what you told them to do, it might actually be like, oh, hey, that's pretty easy. Just like we tend to think that we shouldn't give ourselves credit on our work if it wasn't hard. Well, it doesn't have to be hard in order to be amazing. You know what I mean? You don't have to live this life of burden and anxiety and too much on your plate for something to be good.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. Welcome everybody again to another amazing and awesome episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. I am thrilled today, Carson, that we finally have a guest in, not quite in studio, but in her studio on this rainy day. It just makes me smile that we get to talk to so many wonderful people. And can you introduce who we're talking to today and what her background is?
Yeah. So today we're talking to Tammy Barlett. Tammy was a U.S. Air Force fighter pilot and retired in 2018 as a lieutenant colonel. And after that became a professional speaker. That had to be those radio skills, I think.
Exactly.
You know, she also devoted the last 6+ years to studying mental performance training and shifting the content and the emphasis on it from like elite athletes into how it applies to aviation. And we're going to get into that today, which I'm really excited to. We've spent a lot of time talking about mental health and as well just the mental well-being of a pilot. And in 2022, she founded CrossCheck Mental Performance Training, which is a business that offers online mental performance training courses that are specifically tailored for aviators, which I think is super cool. And Tammy also has a Master of Arts in Christian Ministry, is a mother of three, and is married to a U.S. federal agent. That's kind of cool.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Welcome, Tammy.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, I mean, when we have that type of intro, it's going to be hard to have another person after this. I don't know what we do.
Yeah, I know. Like, we have Austin on and top that, right?
Exactly. The only one who might top you is my son, Austin, who's almost 14.
I'm sure I can find a lot of people that I can reach out to. You can have more guests that top what I have done.
Awesome. Well, Tammy, we always start off with one question, and it's my favorite one because I love hearing the passion behind it. So for that question, it's how did you get into aviation? What inspired you to start becoming a pilot?
That is a great question because I know most of the times people say, oh, I wanted to fly ever since I saw Top Gun, or my dad was a pilot, or whatever they might say. For me, I did grow up believing I could be whatever I wanted to be, but I didn't know any pilots. I didn't know anyone in the military. And hadn't really thought about it. So when I decided that I wanted to go serve my country, even though I didn't know anyone, I decided that I would go to Air Force ROTC at the University of Minnesota. And when I walked in to talk to them, one of the questions they ask, I'm sure everyone, and it's not surprising, they said, well, do you want to be a pilot? I had never thought about it before simply because I didn't know anyone. And it took me about 4 seconds. And I thought, absolutely. That sounds amazing. I mean, I was a gymnast, a roller coaster kid. I loved climbing trees. You know, I think when I was, you know, 4, I wanted to be a bird. So I thought that sounded pretty good.
Okay, you never want to be on the ground. Sounds like a lot of us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just really just went from there. They said, do you want to do that? And I said, yeah. And so I just went down the path. Here I am, years later.
What was the first airplane you flew, kind of non-military airplane, or maybe was it a military airplane? And then what did you end up flying throughout your military career? And I know you also told me something was really neat, when I'll get back into it later, about being a mother and also a fighter pilot, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, the first plane I flew, this is going to be unique. Other than a commercial aircraft, was in the backseat of an F-16 in Germany. I didn't fly. I mean, I didn't actually get to fly it. I was in the backseat, but that was pretty amazing. But as far as which plane did I actually fly myself, that I flew a Piper Warrior when I was at Scott Air Force Base before I actually went to pilot training. There was a delay. So there was like 9 months where I was waiting for pilot training. We had to get civilian. We had to get 40 hours of GA time. And so that's what I was flying at the time.
Was that first flight like an incentive flight for you, or how did you get in that the back of one?
Yeah, when I was between my junior and senior year, the summer between my junior and senior college year, I got selected for a program called Operation Air Force Overseas with Air Force ROTC. And I was at Spangdahlem Air Base in Germany, and I was attached to an F-16 squadron. And so that's how I got the flight.
That's so cool. My first flight was in a 172. So
yeah, mine was also in a 172. Yeah.
Awesome. I don't care. Everything's awesome. I mean, I know I get a lot of people who they're flying 172s and they're like, but I just fly a 172. And I'm like, I don't care. That's amazing. How many people actually get to do that? So it doesn't matter what I did. Think about what you did is amazing too. You know, it's all relative.
I fully agree with that. And I mean, I've trained a lot of pilots, and I'll tell you this, the first time you go fly, in a small aircraft, the first time you go solo and the first time you get your pilot certificate or your wings, if you're a military aviator, those are 3 days that resonate. I mean, there's a lot of things in life that you forget about and just kind of, they go off on the wayside. I'll tell you this, I can remember just as well as my son being born. I can remember that day just as well as the first day I took my first solo flight. I remember the feeling I had, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it right this moment on how that was. So I fully resonate with you. The first flight, doesn't matter if you're flying an F-16 or a Cessna 170 or a 152, flying's still flying. It's less than 1%. I think it's like less than a 10th of 1% of the world ever becomes an aviator, which is mind-boggling considering how entrenched it is for kind of all of our lives, obviously.
Yeah, we get surrounded by pilots, right? We get surrounded by pilots, so we think it's no big deal, but it's really pretty incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be like a bar trick. You talk about, oh, you go into a bar and how do you know somebody's a pilot? They tell you, right? And then I used to do that all the time. Now I'm just like, oh, I'm quiet because I don't feel like talking about it because I talk about it all day long during the day. But it is a cool thing that we all get to do for sure. So outside of that, I know that you're really big on talking about mental performance training, and I would love to kind of get some insight on that. What is mental performance training to you? I mean, can we get like a real rough, I know what it means to me. I know what it means to a lot of people, especially in sports, but how is it applicable towards people in flight training and in aviation in particular?
No, I appreciate that question because I think not everyone necessarily has the same idea of what it is. For what I teach is essentially mindset training, thought awareness, how to keep focus, how to get over failures, how to not be so anxious, how to deal with perfectionism, all that kind of stuff. Because the bottom line is, you know, we need to practice what we, you know, with our mind, because if you don't practice on the ground, you don't have the same access in the air when things get tough. And things eventually will get tough for everyone when we're flying. Everyone knows that aviation challenges everybody at some point. And when you're challenged, you want to know that you are performing the absolute best you can. Because even honestly, even the fear of people have an anxiety inside of them, or what if I have an emergency and I don't know if I'm going to respond properly, that's kind of the applicability of this as well. Because if you train yourself in advance, you're more likely going to react, you know, the way you hope.
Yeah, I mean, I know that one time I had my first engine failure in a multi-engine aircraft. And I was flying this airplane, which I owned, to go look at another airplane that I was going to go buy with a mechanic. So I happened to have a mechanic that was going to go with me to go do a pre-buy full of tools with me.
Wow.
So you sent him out in the wing to go fix it midair?
Not midair. That would be so much fun.
Get this started. Come on, buddy.
Like those old time pictures and videos you see of somebody like putting the wheel on the side of the airplane while it's still flying.
Oh, like wing walkers. Yeah.
Yeah. And wing walkers and stuff. No, I didn't shove Rich onto the wing. Luckily, we had a fuel leak, so it was even worse. I saw blue covering the wings and then starting to lose power and increased and losing RPM and increasing manifold. And I'm like, uh-oh, what's going on right now? I'm more scared of the fire than I was of anything. But luckily, I took off from Riverside Airport, and then straight ahead was Chino Airport. So I could land directly. So I was just kind of in my mode, and all of a sudden, all of my training kicked in. And that mental performance training on me learning how to fly a multi-engine airplane and control, power, drag, identify, verify, fix, or feather. I mean, I don't fly that much multi as much anymore, and I can still remember that and recite it like quickly. And my hands are moving around like this because I'm like, I'm trying to move them right now, right? And I'll tell you what, I landed that airplane, got out. I was kind of relieved and a little stressed, got out. Richard went out. He fixed the airplane on the tarmac, just on the side of the taxiway. And he said, I think we're good to go. He said, are you good to go? I said, I trust you with my life. You obviously trusted me with my life, with your life. And we got back in that airplane, and it was all because of training and being mentally ready for that one time for that to happen. And I had that happen two other times in my life, but that was the worst one because all that blue fuel everywhere. So, I mean, it totally makes sense.
I mean, in a situation like that, I see, you know, how we can apply some sort of a mental performance training. And it's clear as day to me how it can apply to a military pilot. But how can that apply to student pilots with these kind of courses? And I know there's no, you know, quick 10-second answer like you have courses for it. But I mean, how is this applicable to them?
That's interesting because your question sparks a question for me. Like, why would it be just applicable to military? But the idea is that I know that a lot of times military they have missions and lots of intense things going on. But I think that just simply flying up in the air and, you know, whether you're doing a maneuver that stresses you out, you're like, you're trying to figure out holding or an instrument approach, or your stalls make you nervous. Or I have a lot of people come through my course who are landings. They're like, I love everything but landings, man. You know, and so it's really good for all of that stuff. A lot of it is good for anxiety. And the other thing it's good for is leveling up. So anyone who maybe handles everything really, really well, but they just, how can I level up? It's really good for that as well. And there, you know, there's a lot of people that I would say naturally do some of the things that I teach in the course, and they may not need the course. They might, you know, take the course and go, oh yeah, okay. These things I'm doing. There's just a name to it now. There's a lot of people who don't, you know, control their thoughts. They don't know how to get, you know, from ruminating in something. They don't know how to get over mistakes. They don't know how to be less anxious for a check ride. There's ways that we can deal with all that. And it also increases your confidence, which is obviously really good for flying. So I think no matter what airplane you fly, I mean, you take off, and as soon as you start rolling down the runway, you're technically in more danger than, you know, everyday life. And so being more prepared is the best way to, you know, move forward and be the best pilot you possibly can be.
Are there any situations that you've had to encounter where your kind of mental toughness was tested, kind of like my example?
There have been several situations. I mean, and they're mostly emergency situations that I've dealt with. But what I realized is that when I was going through Air Force pilot training, we did something called stand-ups in the morning. And what it was is after the morning brief, you get the weather and all that stuff. Then the students would sit around in like a horseshoe shape in front of their instructors' desks. And in the middle, there was a table and there was a podium with an instructor standing there. They would give a scenario, be like, hey, you know, winds are 130 at 10. We're on runway 13. It's overcast at 3,000 feet. You're rolling down the runway. You pass 75 knots. You get a red light in the cockpit. Lieutenant Barlett, you have the aircraft. And I'd have to stand up and, you know, I'm going to maintain aircraft control, analyze the situation, take the proper action, and land as soon as conditions permit, and then go through all those steps and with everyone watching. And I thought it was kind of like hazing. I mean, I knew it was good procedurally. That's really good, obviously. But I thought, man, this is a little excessive and stressful. But the really neat thing about it, especially looking backwards, is there was mental performance training happening right there, because there's a lot of emergencies. I mean, you can't simulate emergencies in the air you can't actually shut an engine down. I mean, I can put it at 60% or whatever the technique is, but I can't shut it down. And so there's not that actual stress there, but social situations are very stressful for people. And it taught us how to perform under stressful situations and remain calm. And what I thought was very interesting was that from that point on, with the exception of one time, and I'll share that after this, but with the exception of one time, every single time I had an emergency, it just kicked in. Everything just kicked in because I'd put myself there before. I'd been there before. And it sounds like you have too. You've done that as well. And so everything just happened. The only time that I had a struggle was a day I shouldn't have been flying. It was a day I walked outside and I was going to fly formation in the T-38 as an instructor. And I looked at the sky and I thought to myself, dear God, just don't give me an emergency today. And that was my point where I should have turned around and said, no, I'm done today. This isn't a day to fly. Cause I just was tired and I shouldn't have gone. But I did, and I did get an emergency and I did handle it properly, but I didn't feel good about the analyzation. I executed the right procedures, but it was a slow process of like, what is actually happening here? So that was the difference that happened for me. But yeah, I mean, I've had to shut down an engine in Korea. I've had the most disconcerting was no airspeed but I was in formation. So I just had somebody take me on the wing down and land in Korea too. But
a lot of things happening in Korea. Hopefully they're on the right border.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure I had other emergencies happen. I flew lots of planes, but those stick out to me.
How many flight hours are you at now?
I don't know. Between 3,000 and 4,000.
Nice. Yeah. And yeah. Did you say that you flew also when we talked prior, you said you flew remote as well?
I did. A lot of those are actually remote. So combat support time. So what happened was in 2006, I had cervical spine reconstruction and I could have gone back to fly the A-10, but it was going to be a big process and it would have taken me an assignment somewhere else. And I was, about to get married. So I decided it was a good opportunity to transition into the guard unit here in Arizona, where they were just standing up a Predator squadron. And I essentially helped stand that squadron up here in Arizona. And I flew the Predator and the Reaper combined for about 6 years. And that's where I went to weapon school. And, I missed flying. I missed formation specifically because I love formation, but I knew that every day I was making a difference because all we flew were combat support sorties. So I'd sit in Tucson flying a plane that's in Iraq or Afghanistan and doing the mission that way.
That's incredible that it even works like that.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
I mean, the closest I've seen to that was at Oshkosh when they actually brought, one of those like mobile command centers. And I think it was a Reaper.
I don't know. Yeah, something it was just something there, giant looked like a giant.
And I was like, wow, that is not what I thought it was. So
interesting because the Predator, I want to say, wingspan's like equivalent to a 172, whereas a Reaper is 50 feet, more like the wingspan of an A-10. It's huge.
When I was in my flight schools, there was a guy who worked for me and he worked for a contractor. He wasn't in the military. He worked for a contractor, but he flew all of those drones as well. I forgot what they call it, sight, or he was a sensor operator at one point, and then he actually flew them for a very long time. Actually, there's two people that used to work there. And he said anytime he would go get a mission, he would be in Afghanistan or Iraq, and of course he can't tell me anything, and I would try to give him beer and try to get him to tell me, and he would be like, Brandon, just stop. I'm not going to tell you anything. And I'm like, oh, fine. I can't hear your fun stories. But he would be like, yeah, essentially, if some bad guy needs to get destroyed, he said he would just stand up. Military actually has to sit down and go press the red button. He said he wasn't allowed to press a red button as a civilian, which I guess is a good thing. But I can't imagine how stressful being in a combat situation, knowing that, it may just be a drone in your hands, but I mean, there's civilians around and that's a stressful situation too. So if you don't have the mental toughness to deal with that or to deal with what you're pressing this red button to do, I'm sure that's very difficult to deal with, especially from a military perspective. And I'm assuming that's probably where Carson was going with that on the military side.
I get what you're saying there. That you're right. That is a completely different.
I just have a normal amount of stress for an aviator. I don't have any additional, no one's chasing me. I don't have to worry about, oh, I can't land here. It's not safe. I mean,
well, it's all relative, right? I mean, we talked about the fourth. It's all relative. And, if someone's just had an experience flying a Cessna, that's stressful. I mean, you can go fly an F-16 and come back to a Cessna and go, wow, this is pretty slow. But the truth is that even I can get in a Cessna and go, whoa, what am I doing? Because, it can be overwhelming.
Brandon's seen that with some of the pilots.
Oh, I trained a Blue Angel one time to fly a Beechcraft Duchess, and he was overwhelmed.
No, I bet. Yeah.
It's funny. But I will say, that this mental toughness thing has to come. It comes out in all facets of life. It's not just flying. It's not just military. It's not just a commercial aviation. It also comes out. I'm in this business group. It's called Entrepreneurs Organization. And we were talking the other day about how problems that used to seem so big now seem so small. And I've attributed that to having to go through more and more and more tough issues that we overcame. And I know I've dealt with some huge issues in different businesses that I've owned over the years. And now I look back, and there's one in particular that I had at my flight school when I used to own my flight school that I thought was like wrecking my life and like crying and like all of these things were so terrible, right? And now I look back at that day, and Carson knows which one I'm talking about. I'm not going to get into it here, but it was stressful. It was the worst day of my life, it felt like. And now I look back at that day and I just laugh at it. I'm like, oh, I've dealt with so many other bigger problems that have just, that issue made me tougher. And it sounds like when you did those stand-ups, that experience, social experience, made you tougher, not just in social aspects probably, but also as an aviator, which is amazing. I mean, I can't believe that.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, one of the biggest things that created my mental toughness, because when I got out of the Air Force and I went into professional speaking, my keynote is all about perseverance. And you can't speak to an audience and help them if you don't know how, like, how did I persevere? So I really had to go through and like reverse engineer, like, what did I do? What was different than other people who don't do these things? And one of the things I like, and it's really just the choice to go into the military that started it all, because there is no quitting. I mean, I could quit pilot training, but I still have to be in the Air Force, you know, or whatever. But it really kind of got me into this no quit mentality. And if you were to hear my keynote, one of the main things you'll hear me say is I developed this mentality, this perseverance mentality of I will fail out before I ever pull the ejection handle to bail out. So I'll fail out before I bail out. Like I will barrel towards failure until it happens. And more often than not, you know, you look like you're going to fall off a cliff and then the road sharp turn to the right and it's a beautiful view and you don't fail. It's really so much. And I heard you saying this yourself. It's really just not quitting. It's looking at these problems and going, every problem is solvable. I just need to keep reattacking it. And that's a lot of, you know, having that perseverance mindset that just to like be in the right place to keep going and be successful.
Well, I think one of the things that interferes with perseverance for a lot of people, especially pilots, I worked at Brand's flight school for a while and I saw this with a lot of students was, you know, I can't get it down and I keep messing up and they're just such perfectionists. And it's just, it's something that a lot of people deal with. I see Brandon deal with it all the time. Don't worry. But it's just having everything perfectly right, understanding things the first time. And I think that's why at least student pilots struggle with perfectionism.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brain.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show.
I know that's another point that you talk about quite a bit is that trap of perfectionism. So how do you help people with overcoming that?
Yeah, when I was a little kid, my mom used to introduce me as her little perfectionist. And I stood there proudly thinking, you know, like, yep, that's me. Perfect, you know, perfect in my mind was a good thing. And then I grew up and learned more and more. Perfectionism is not a good thing. I mean, so what I like to say is strive for perfection, but don't be a perfectionist, meaning it is really, I don't want you to change your lofty goals. Like, don't lower your standards. But on the back side of it, use that the imperfection as that's your area to learn. If you do everything perfect the first time, then I mean, that's incredible, really. But you know, So one of the things we teach in the course, there's a whole module, there's a whole inside a module, there's a whole lesson on battling perfectionism and its relation to failure, because a lot of times people, they don't act. So if I can get this quote right, it's by Dr. Nate Zinser. And he says, "The highest achievers in any given field are only moderate perfectionists, while those with the highest levels of perfection are only moderate achievers, because the anxiety they feel over making a mistake stops them from taking timely action." And that really hit home with me.
That makes a lot of sense. You get so stuck up on, you know, getting one thing exactly right, and you might get it right eventually, but how long is it going to take you?
Right. A couple of the things that help people understand this is, if you are a pilot, think about if you're going to execute a steep turn. I'm not going to say I need you to have it exactly on altitude, on airspeed, on heading, on bank angle, everything perfectly. Like, you would look at me and go, that's ridiculous. But we need to see more of everything in aviation like that, because you're not going to have a perfect landing every time. You're not going to have a perfect stall recognition every time in recovery. Like, you're going to hopefully be close, but you don't need to beat yourself up. You use that as information. It doesn't define you. It should inform you. And so the other thing I like to think about is, if you were to do a maze, like, you know how you go to the restaurants and the kids have the mazes they do? If you go through that maze and you hit a dead end, what do? Turn around and you find another way, right? That's how we need to look at everything. It's not a failure. It's just, oh, that way didn't work, so I'm going to go another way. It's just information.
I really like that kind of steep turn example that you used, actually, because I find that that's something that, I'm not going to say all, but almost all student pilots struggle with immensely. And I'll tell you, I struggled with it when I was a student pilot as well. And now, whenever, because people try to make it perfect, and that is that one maneuver that you've just got this small variance and everyone death grips the control wheel or yoke or whatever you want to call it. It's called a control wheel. Everybody listening to us in a 172, death gripping the control wheel, and they end up going up and down and doing these oscillations throughout their steep turn or losing a bunch of altitude at the end. And then I've showed techniques and I'm like, look at this. I'm going to be totally relaxed. I'm going to set to this power setting at 2100, and depending on what airplane I'm flying. I'm going to start at this airspeed and I'm going to do three swipes of trim and I'm going to turn to 45 degrees. And boom, I don't have to do anything. And the airplane just goes around in a nice circle. And at the end of it, it hits its wake turbulence and bumps around a little bit and goes around a second time. And if you just take a step back, realize, like, there, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to practice. And trust me, I didn't learn that it was three swipes in that particular 172. It was 2.5 in a different. Depending on, you had to fly that airplane a bunch of times to figure out its sweet spots for it to become perfect. And I didn't even strive to be perfect. I just strive to create this nice, beautiful steep turn. And eventually it happened. And it was after I stopped caring as much. So, I mean, that's a really a cool way.
I mean, there's margins of error for a reason. No one expects perfection, right?
Yeah. ACS does not say you need to be perfect. It says you need to meet a standard,
yeah,
which is a standard of training. And it's not 100%, which is really funny. I took a scuba class. I know it's kind of off topic. I took a scuba class and the instructor has been an instructor for, I don't know, 40 years. Brilliant guy. I respect him to death. And I still go to his shop and I still buy things from him. And he actually just signed off a test that I took last night. But he has this area of, if you are a scuba diver, you can pass all of your tests in the water, but for your written test, you must score a 100% on it. And it's the one thing out of his entire course that I wholly disagreed on from owning flight schools and being an instructor myself. Perfection is not the point. Learning is the point. By the way, the passing grade on that was a 70% through the accreditation authority, right? But he wanted 100 for him to sign you off. And I took that test like 15 times. And each time it took me an hour. And I didn't learn anything more by taking that test 15 times, except for how to memorize or cheat the answers so I can finally get the 100% because I'm a busy guy. And there's a reason why the FAA had, by the way, I don't like the FAA's test either, but at least they have a 70% threshold. And then whatever you miss, they focus on those areas to retrain you. And that's the way that I thought that test should have been taken. Like, if I failed 15 or 20%, sure, you're right, I didn't hit 100, but that's the time that you go retrain me on those things. And go make me spend $100 for an hour of training with you. I would much prefer that, because now I actually learn something rather than just strive for this fake version of perfection.
Oh, exactly.
I saw your eyes light up when you heard me say that. So I'm glad I'm not the only one who thinks that was a crazy idea.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, it sounds like you learned a lot more under the FAA system than you, the other one, you're just trying to get it done, you know? And, you know, the other thing you were talking about in the steep turn, there's a couple of things that brought up for me. First of all, it brings up, if people are trying to hold a standard that's too high, let's say they're trying to hold their airspeed perfectly in route, they're probably not focusing their attention. Their cross-check isn't on the right things because they're putting too much emphasis on something that doesn't need to be exactly perfect. It just needs to be close. And that way it releases your brain to focus on things that it needs to focus on. But the other thing it brings up, and this is interestingly enough, applies to entrepreneurs as well. I mean, not just entrepreneurs, but it comes up there, is that we have this idea that it can't be easy. So you were talking about how easy a steep turn could be. Your student sometimes probably thinks, well, that can't work for me. It's got to be hard for me because I'm new and it can't be as easy as it is for him. And granted, there's going to be a learning curve, but if somebody literally just did exactly what you told them to do, it might actually be like, oh, hey, that's pretty easy. Just like we tend to think that we shouldn't give ourselves credit on our work if it wasn't hard. Well, it doesn't have to be hard in order to be amazing. You know what I mean? You don't have to live this life of burden and anxiety and too much on your plate for something to be good.
Exactly. I mean, I like going to good restaurants and it needs to be good. It doesn't have to be perfectionist, like quality food type of stuff. Like, it can happen in all facets of our life. So it's really interesting that it really applies towards pilots in such an immense way. But speaking of cross-check, you're wearing cross-check on your shirt. I would love to know what cross-check means to you outside of what you just explained.
Like, what does it mean in general, or why am I wearing the shirt?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. So obviously I love the term cross-check. I think, you know, and obviously in aviation, it's important to have a really strong cross-check. And when I give keynotes, I actually talk about how a cross-check is applicable to life in general as well. Like, so many times we get, like, let's say there's a problem, we get sucked into the problem and we're staring only at the problem. And if you compare that to aviation, let's say you have an oil system malfunction. If you are just to stare at your oil gauge, you're going to eventually crash. You have to keep your cross check going. And just like in life, you can't just get sucked into a problem. But a lot of times we let that happen because we're like, oh my gosh, this thing is so overwhelming. And we get stuck there and we don't keep our cross-check going. So cross-check has multiple meanings for me. And then, you know, ultimately I turned it into my business name as far as cross-check mental performance training, because I think that that's, you know, cross-check is just really important in flying and life. And so that's what I named the business itself as well.
That's fantastic. I remember teaching IFR and even learning IFR. I mean, you hear the word cross-check about 10,000 times. During every lesson, cross check. Is your airspeed showing correctly? And we'll be covering up certain things and trying to cross check that. So, I mean, I totally get it. And it's a fantastic name, by the way. I did want to ask you before we kind of go into our wrap up phase of the podcast. You told me a story that I thought was awesome about overcoming problems. When it's not right that somebody tells you no or you can't do something. And you told me about when you were pregnant with one of your kids and not being able to fly. And I would love if you share that story in the shortened version, because I thought it's actually, I mean, if somebody says no, the answer is not always no, it's yes, especially if it doesn't make any sense. There's so many things in life that don't make sense at all. And when they told you no, that didn't make sense at all to me. So
yeah, so one of the reasons I went into the unmanned platforms, because I knew I was going to get married and I wanted to have babies. And, you know, at the time we couldn't fly ejection seat and be pregnant at the same time. We were grounded. So I thought, well, this is perfect, actually. So I got married. I got pregnant. I went to the flight doctor to just validate it. I was so excited. And he's like, yep, you're pregnant. He's like, and you're grounded. I'm like, wait, what? And what am I grounded for? I fly from a trailer on the other side of the base, 3 feet off the ground. What's the problem? And he's like, well, the regulations haven't caught up yet. So we're applying heavy aircraft regulations to you. And so they did. They grounded me. But flying a heavy aircraft, a big plane, you can fly your second trimester. So while I flew my second trimester, we continued the paperwork to try and get this regulation changed. And so I ended up getting it changed so I could fly up till 36 weeks of gestation. And so I was literally flying combat sorties and shooting missiles, and had this big, huge belly. It was quite interesting, but it was it was awesome to be able to still do my job because I was the chief instructor pilot in the squadron and they really needed me. So yeah.
That's fantastic. That's I know it's a short one, but it's an impactful one nonetheless. It means you can get people to change their minds, even powerful military people. So
especially when things don't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, honestly.
Yeah. It didn't make a lot of sense to me at all. I was so surprised. I was like, wait, what?
All right. Well, you know, Tammy, I think we're getting to just about the end of it, but there's one more question I had for you. And I know this is a really broad one. It can go any way you'd like, but we have a lot of student pilots that listen to us, a lot of CFIs, and yeah, we even have airline pilots, and we actually know the FAA listens to us. So
they told me one day, hi FAA, when I was doing my DPE training.
Yeah. But besides that, the question is like, what is a good just mental performance tip that every pilot should know?
Okay. The quickest one I can tell you is getting over mistakes. There's a whole process I teach in my class to get over mistakes that's much more helpful. But in the meantime, I like to tell people, you got to shift your mind to just say two words to yourself. What now? So if you find yourself what-ifing, like, oh my gosh, what if this happens? What if that happens? Or you're thinking about something that just happened and you're thinking, oh my gosh, what if I do that again? Or what's going to happen to me? Am I going to fail this ride? Stop. And just say to yourself, what now? What now? It shifts your mind to a place where it's easier to actually be in the present moment because that's where you absolutely need to be when you're flying a plane.
That's amazing. Thank you. That clicks for me.
I love that. So with that, to that point, time for your shameless plug, which I don't even think you need because if I listened to you this entire time, I would want to learn more.
Yeah, I'm so interested.
So if you can, please let our listeners know where we can find your courses and any resources that you have, free or paid. And we'd love to kind of know more about how we can find that and get that traffic over to you. And then Mark, of course, we'll have everything below in the show notes, of course. That way we can reach you there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The website for the course is crosscheckmentalperformance.com. And you can find all the information there. If you're looking for free content, if you go through my posts on LinkedIn, that's typically where I post as much useful information as I can. And I post with intent. And I don't just post to get attention. So I post with intention, not for attention. I like to give useful things there. So that's the best place for free stuff. And just, I want everyone to understand that this class is not just for zero R pilots or student pilots. It's anyone who wants to level up mentally and they know they could use some help. I'm happy to be there for you. And it's 4 weeks long. It's awesome. I love it. We have a discussion group, so I get to meet everybody.
That's so cool.
That's very awesome. And again, thank you so much for being here today. Like I said in the beginning, our normal episodes are 20, 25 minutes. And look at this, we're already at 37, minus a couple for the talk before. So obviously, it was a very interesting conversation. We really love talking with you. Honestly, I'm a big fan of increasing my mental performance every day during on my way to work. I read or listen, not read while driving, but listen to books. and things like that, trying to increase my mental stamina. So thank you so much for today. It was truly a pleasure to have you on the Aviation Mentors podcast and looking forward to seeing you in person one of these days at one of the shows. I know you've got to meet some of the Stratus team members, but unfortunately I haven't yet got to meet you in person. So looking forward to that.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And I should throw one more thing out there, that FAA, they get wings credit for taking my class, just so you know, but I appreciate you having me on here.
Oh, by the way, wings credit for everybody who doesn't know, you can get discounts on insurance. You can, it's all sorts of amazing things. So go check out FAAwings, I think, .gov. Don't quote me on that. But yeah.
Yeah. Tammy, thank you so much for being on with us. I already learned a lot. I appreciate the free content just from this episode, but I'm definitely going to check everything else out. And I think it's a huge thing for all pilots that are learning. And as a pilot, you never stop learning. So again, that's pretty much everybody. So Tammy, thank you.
Perfect. And if any of you on one of our listeners want to reach out to either one of us, you can reach us on our emails, brandon@aviationmentors.com, carson@aviationmentors.com, or for our producer, Mark, it's producer@aviationmentors.com. Don't forget to hit like, follow, stream, all of the things, please. Oh, don't forget share. We really like that one. On whatever streaming platform you're either listening or hopefully watching us on nowadays, we really appreciate the help. And it's a huge part of helping us grow the podcast and more importantly, helping the aviation community grow. So thank you so much and looking forward to the next time.
Thank you, everyone. As we wrap up for the day, remember, here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
See you.